Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Camaro Dave and Commander Chris coming to you from our world-famous Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland. The 4th of July is a week or less away, and we've got to get you folks tuned up. There is no doubt about that. So I asked the man that I trust to help me get you tuned up, and that is Meathead from Amazing Ribs. We are going to be talking about ribs all day. Hi, how are you?
You know, for Thanksgiving, it's turkey. 4th of July, it's got to be all-American ribs.
You bet. You bet. By the way, let me get this in real quick. We'd like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef for helping sponsor this show. Painted Hills Natural Beef, the way nature intended. You can check them out at PaintedHillsNaturalBeef.com. Okay, so now we're talking with Meathead.
And if you've never done beef ribs out there, folks, oh, boy, are you in for a treat.
Oh, yes, you are. So let's kind of start. I mean, you've been on this show a couple dozen times now, and I love it every time you're on, and we're pals off the air. But just for those markets that just have brought this show on, which is Philadelphia and Tulsa and a few others, let's start from the beginning. And let's start with pork ribs, because those are the ones that get cooked the most. Let's give a little background on pork ribs and what they should be looking for when they purchase them, and then we'll get on to cooking.
Well, when we talk about ribs in this country, we're almost always talking about pork ribs. I mean, everybody loves ribs. First of all, you eat them with your fingers.
Yeah.
Although my wife sometimes, I'm not going to. Not going to beat her up on the air. you see, knife and fork, it just drives me nuts. I mean, you know, and you got to get it on your shirt. If you don't get it on you, you're not doing it right.
Right.
There are several different cuts of ribs, and it's useful to know the differences. You know, my doorbell just rang, and, oh, geez. 30 seconds, we're going to have to pick up. Can you do
all
this
right,
bit on
sure,
it?
Sure. Hold on.
It's a painter. He's here to work on my deck. And he used to just show up and go to work. And I gave him a lecture the other day and told him he has to ring the bell when he shows up. Shows what happens here.
Okay. So if you need to step away for a minute, I'll pause it.
30. No, I'm just. Hey there, Ryan. How you doing? Good. Good. You ready to finish it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hallelujah. All right. Well, you don't need me. All right, get at it and do what you can on the surface and the cracks here in the table. And then if you want to go after the pickets, go for them. The cracks?
Yeah, I did.
And you got to put another coat over here, don't you?
No, I did.
Oh, you did that already. Okay. Whatever got to be done, do it. Come on in, Reese. Sorry about that, JT.
No worries.
I'm back. I'm going to start at the top.
We'll just pick up. We're talking about the different types of pork ribs.
Okay. Let me just go sit down so I'm not gasping for air.
Yeah.
Oh, brother, I apologize.
Don't worry.
Okay. Well, it's useful to know the different cuts of ribs because they have some distinct differences. Everybody's heard of baby back ribs.
Sure.
First of all, they're not from baby pigs. They're from the back. They lie just on either side of the spine, and there's a big tubular muscle that lies on top. That's the pork loin, and that's where most of your pork roasts and pork chops come from.
Right.
And just under that is where the baby backs are, and you can almost always tell them because they're curved. They're kind of hockey stick shaped. And the meat that's on top of them is loin meat, so it tends to be fairly lean. And these ribs are maybe 4 or 5 inches long. Now, as you move further down the side of the animal, you get into side ribs or spare ribs, and they run from where the baby backs end down the sides and around the chest area. And these guys are fairly straight and fairly flat, and the meat there is between the bones, not on top of the bones, because on top of the bones is where most of the bacon comes from. So they trim the meat pretty close to the bone there, and the side ribs or spare ribs have a little more meat and a little more fat and a little more connective tissue, so they tend to be richer and more succulent. So if you want a leaner rib, go for the baby back. If you want your richer, more flavorful, more succulent, go for the spare ribs. Now, there's one other cut that's worth mentioning, and that is if you trim off the tips of the ribs where it wraps around the chest of the animal, there's a lot of cartilage in them, and if you trim them off, you get a rectangular shaped slab of ribs that's called the St. Louis cut or the center cut. And those are my favorite. They have a lot of flavor. They're rectangular, perfectly rectangular. They lay flat, so if you're going to cook them indoors and you want to brown them in a pan, they're easy to brown because they're flat. They're not curved like back ribs. So those are your options, essentially three options. Now, you can get rib tips all by themselves. They're very fatty, but they're really delicious. They have a lot of cartilage in it, so you're constantly sucking to get the cartilage out. A bit odd, but they're very tasty. And there's one other cut worth mentioning, and that's country-style ribs. They come from the shoulder of the hog, and they're really not ribs. They may have a rib bone or two in them, but they're really pork chops, and they shouldn't be cooked like ribs. Ribs require a very special cooking technique, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Right.
Country-style ribs should be treated like pork chops, and that means cook them to a lower temperature, 140 to 145 degrees internal temperature. But baby backs, spares, and St. Louis cut, they require a different cooking temperature that we'll deep dive on in a minute.
Yeah, and I think sometimes with the country-style ribs, because people look at them in the package and they look thick, you know, and ooh, those look good. And they are, if you cook them properly. If you
They're very meaty, yes.
Yes, but if you don't cook them properly, they can also be tougher than a boiled owl.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, I mentioned that they're different technique. When you cook spare ribs, back ribs, side ribs, you typically cook them a very long, low and slow temperature, and the internal temperature is often 195 to 203 degrees. Now, well done is 155.
Right.
So this is 45 to 50 degrees beyond well done. And that seems like unfair torture to the poor meat. But what happens at those temperatures is they get really succulent. The fat melts and the connective tissues gelatinize, and you get wonderful, rich textures and flavors. If you cook them to a lower temp, like you would a pork chop, 140 or 145 degrees, they're almost inedible because they're too tough.
Right.
So the country ribs, which are really like a pork chop, they're just fine at 140 to 145. So they shouldn't have the word rib attached to them at all. They should be shoulder steaks. And in fact, sometimes they're called shoulder steaks, but they're not truly ribs, and you shouldn't treat them like ribs.
Okay, I got one thing that's really a big pet peeve of mine, and I know it is of yours, but I want to clear this up right here in the first segment. It absolutely drives me bonkers, and if we were just doing a podcast version, I'd use a different adjective. When they say, oh, these are so good, they just fell off the bone. Why in the hell do you want to cook it so that they fall off the bone? Why don't you just trim all the meat off and throw it in a frying pan if you're going to do it that way?
Well, that comes in handy if you don't have teeth.
I guess so.
Or if you're still in the Gerber phase of life.
Right.
which is either at the front end or back end.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why. People want the meat very tender, and you can get them very tender. You know, there's no law about cooking. We like to say there should be no rules in the bedroom or the kitchen.
Right.
But it's generally believed by people who really cook a lot, who cook barbecue a lot, that ribs should have similar texture to a steak. It should have the meatiness, tender, but should have some resilience. And what we like to see is when you bite into it, it'll pull off the bone, but it won't fall off the bone.
Right.
The way you get it to fall off the bone is to steam it or boil it or simmer it. Now, you can do that, and a lot of people do that. A lot of people will throw it in boiling water or simmering water before they throw it on the grill, and that really tenderizes it, and it makes it where it can fall off the bone. The problem is when you take it out of the water and you look at the water, it's brown.
Yep.
And that's all flavor that has come out of the meat that you can't get back in. That's lost potential. That's lost flavor. The best way to maintain that flavor is to roast that meat, either in the oven or in a grill where it's cooked by gentle, warm, circulating air. You never want to put it directly over the hot flame. You almost always put it over indirect side. That is, you divide your grill in half, hot flame on one side or hot coals on one side and nothing on the other side, and the meat goes on the nothing side. It's called indirect heat, and it's just going to take time. Baby backs can take 3 to 4 hours at 225 air temp.
Right.
And St. Louis cut or the side ribs, spare ribs, can take 5 or 6 hours at 225 air temp. And you put them over on that indirect side, and that's, you try to get the temp around 225, and just low and slow. That's Southern barbecue. That's when you get it the most tender, the most succulent, the most juicy.
Meathead and I are going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. We're going to be back. We're going to tell you more about getting you tuned up to cook ribs for the 4th of July coming up right after this. Please stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Sun and Vision Radio Network. I'm JT along with Camaro Dave, Commander Chris, and we've got Meathead with us today. Before we talk to him again, if you'd like to email us, it's very simple. I switched emails because this way I don't have to go to 13 different screens, which is normal. Just info@thecowboycook.com, info@thecowboycook.com. You can find us on Facebook, which is Barbecue Nation JT. Same on Twitter. I do actually more Twitter on my own personal account, which is CowCook57, but they're all linked. Everything's linked anymore, so it doesn't really matter. We'll find you. You find us. Now let's get back. Talk with my friend Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. Before we go back, talk to
the email. The FBI got the old one.
Yeah.
Or the IRS.
They all got them. Trust me. Like I said, they're all linked. You've got a new book coming out about ribs.
Yeah, actually, it just came out this week. It's an ebook. It's only on Amazon. It's a Kindle, but a lot of people don't realize you can get an app that works perfectly for Kindle on iPhone and iPad and Mac OS and Android and Kindle and PC. So okay. You can read Kindle books on any platform. And it's everything you ever needed to know about ribs, plus some really good recipes for a rub, a sauce, competition ribs, classic great backyard ribs, oven-baked ribs, slow cooker ribs, everything you ever wanted to know about ribs, all the stuff we're talking about today. And it's $3.99.
You can't beat that with a rented mule, man. That is good stuff. One thing I was going to tell you that we talked about a little bit in the first segment, and then we'll move on to technique here. You know, we're talking about those country style ribs and be careful cooking them and that. One thing I personally have done, and I'm sure you've done this, and I'm not an overly big fan of this stuff, except in the dead middle of winter, but I've actually put them in a crock pot and cooked them all day long with some other stuff, and then they turned out pretty good, you know. That you don't.
Yeah, I think one of the tricks for that is if you want to put a lot of onions and carrots are good on the bottom so that the ribs sort of float on top. And, of course, you're going to put a lot of barbecue sauce in there.
Sure.
And they're going to steam. They will fall off the bone. But when you do it this way, all the juices that come out of the meat and the marrow remain in the pot. They remain in the sauce. They get into the onions and the carrots and the potatoes or whatever else you put in there. We've got a recipe for it in this new book and on our website, AmazingRibs.com. And I forgot to mention this new book. It's on Amazon. It's called Amazing Ribs Made Easy, and the URL is easy. It's tinyurl.com/loveribs.
Oh, there you go.
tinyurl.com/loveribs, and that'll get you to that $3.99 ebook.
There you go. Perfect.
And the slow cooker ribs, you do salvage all of those juices in the sauce, and then you just smother them with the sauce. And you put potatoes on the table or baked potatoes or if they're in the crock pot, and it just gets in everything. And that's just wonderful, savory, rich.
We love that. So let's say they've whoever's listening, they've gone to this store and they've bought a couple of racks of ribs. And so they take them home and they look at it. And what should they do? What should they do? Should they trim a little fat off of it? Should they leave it?
There are often big globules of fat, and if you see those, you need a really sharp knife. I like to use a fillet knife. I have a $10 Rapala fillet knife. It's a fisherman's knife, but it's flexible and it's wicked sharp, and it's really good at getting thin horizontal slices to get the fat off the ribs, because ribs do have a curvature to them, so a flexible blade is really good at that. Occasionally on the ends, it's a little weird, you know, you got some loose flat or flab or something. You can trim that off. Now, if you flip it over on the concave side where the bones are visible, you'll often have what's called a membrane. And it's actually the pleura, the membrane that lines the inside of the rib cavity and holds the lungs and the stomach and all that stuff in. And that membrane can get leathery or even rubbery, depending on how it's cooked. It's always a nice thing to do to remove it. Mm-hmm. Now, you can ask your butcher to do that. You can't tell when you buy a package of ribs on that styrofoam box if it's been removed. Chances are it hasn't. If it hasn't, what you do is, when you get it home, you get a butter knife and you slide it between that membrane and the bone. And once you get that that membrane a little loose, you get a paper towel, because it'll help you get a grip on it. Grip it with a paper towel, and you can peel it off. And I have pictures of this in our little book and also on our website, AmazingRibs.com, that shows you how to remove the membrane. If you can't do it, if for some reason or other it's a pain and you can't get it off, it's a good idea to just slash that membrane with a sharp knife a few times, because there's a layer of fat underneath. And if you slash it, that fat will render and drip off, and it'll come out a little leaner. Now, I often hear people complain, I don't like Joe's barbecue because the ribs are too fatty. Hey, this is not diet food. I mean, you're not going to eat ribs every day. You're not going to gain a lot of weight eating ribs on the 4th of July or once a month or whatever. The fat, as we all know, is flavor, and it's rich, succulent flavor. You want to trim off excess fat, big globules of fat.
Sure.
But there's a lot of marbling, there's a lot of fat in between the bones, in between the meat, and that's part of what makes ribs so luscious.
One of the things that I've done, and I think you and I have talked about this before, but you kind of just touched on it there. If there's trouble, you know, getting the membrane off, what I will do is take a knife and I will score it slightly, like you said, kind of horizontally, but I'll score it kind of down the rib itself. I don't go all the way because then you're going to create that thing where things fall off. But I score it partially there. That does let some of that get out there. Makes it a little easier. So if they're not sure about pulling off the membrane or they're having trouble, either the horizontal, as you described, or they can try what I do. Little sharp knife. Works pretty good, actually.
Some people actually like the membrane. If you cook it in a very dry environment, it can get kind of leathery, almost like a very thin, papery jerky.
Yeah.
And some people really like it.
We're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation on the Sun and Vision Radio Network. Meathead and I will be back in just a couple minutes, so stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Camaro Dave, Commander Chris, and the whole Turn It, Don't Burn It crew here on Barbecue Nation. We've got my good friend Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com. If you have never been to that site, which I can't imagine anybody that likes barbecue hasn't been to that site, but if you haven't, because if you've been living in a cave, we recommend to go to AmazingRibs.com. There is virtually all the information in the world or that you could possibly get through in 2 or 3 hours sitting there, if not more. Hours.
I tell people who ask, what do I do? I say, don't go there unless you've got 2 or 3 hours to kill.
Yeah.
Because it's a rabbit hole. You get sucked in. It is the largest by far, almost 4,000 pages of content.
Yeah.
Recipes, technique, myth busting, science, culinary science, history, product reviews, 500 grills tested and thermometers. So it's a really deep, rich website. And we have a membership portion of the site. The website's free, but we do have a membership portion that's pretty cool, too, called the Pitmaster Club.
Yeah, and if you go to the Pitmaster Club, you get to hear yours truly sometimes.
That's right. We keep an archive of the best of JT.
There you go.
In the Pitmaster Club.
There you go.
And that's cool because not everybody gets to hear you across the country.
That's
right.
We're
working on getting you in all markets, but until that happens, we're in the Pitmaster Club worldwide.
Did you know that... 2 weeks ago, I was number 122 in food podcasts in Japan, just for example. I have no idea what that will
Did you gain. Pop a bottle of champagne?
I drank some water and went to the bathroom. But anyway.
Honey, I'm 122 in Japan.
Yeah, but worldwide. Now, here's some stuff for you. And we do food, and we're in the categories of arts and leisure. And worldwide, I'm right around 115th in, like, leisure and 110 in arts. And then I float around in the food depending on the topic.
Well, I'm not surprised. Yeah. You do good content. I mean, I listen to your stuff. I learn things from you.
Probably learn
what? About the interview you did with Homer, is that his name?
Will Homer.
Tina Hills?
Yeah.
That was really insightful about what's going on in the food supply. If your listeners didn't hear it, they can get it. Tell them how on SoundCloud.
You just go to Barbecue Nation JT on SoundCloud, and we have an archive of the shows there. You can also get that show like on Captivate and Apple and all that. So they're on all the major podcast platforms. And the interview with Will Homer, who's the COO of Painted Hills Beef, really, like you said, gave our listeners the insight of how this process works and who controls what. And sometimes it's our old buddies, the ranchers and producers, that are at the mercy of bigger forces in the world. And
they get blamed for stuff. It's not their fault.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, speaking of getting blamed for stuff. But it probably is our fault. So we've got the rib now. We've got it on the platter. We've taken the membrane off the back. Now we're getting ready to go put it on the grill. So what do we do?
We gotta season it first.
You
gotta salt it. Now I know a lot of people are really conscious about how much salt they have in their diet.
Right.
The rule of thumb here is a half a teaspoon per pound of meat of kosher salt, Morton's kosher salt, half a teaspoon per pound of meat in general for all meats, except ribs. Ribs are about 50% bone, so you cut that in half, about a quarter teaspoon of Morton's kosher salt. Now, Morton's kosher salt is a large grain salt. If you're using table salt, which is a small grain salt, you use half as much as Morton's kosher salt.
Mm-hmm.
So we say a half a teaspoon for regular meats, you use a quarter teaspoon of regular table salt. For ribs, we say a quarter teaspoon per pound of meat, you use an eighth of a teaspoon. I know it sounds confusing, but it's a pretty straightforward rule of thumb for all meat, because you go by the poundage, because the salt's a magic rock. Salt is just two little atoms, sodium and chloride, and when they get on the surface of the meat, they get wet, and they go deep into the meat. After you get the salt down, you're going to put a spice rub on there. And you can buy spice rubs in the store, but they have a lot of salt in them, about 50%. So you're paying a lot of money for salt.
Right.
Plus, you want all the other things in that rub, the paprika, the garlic, the onion powder, the sugar, brown sugar, they can't penetrate. I know you think that your marinades and your rubs penetrate, but they don't. This is a myth. Their molecules are just too large. Salt, 2 atoms. Sugar, 23 atoms. It can get just into the cracks and pores and go down maybe a quarter or an eighth of an inch. Now, on a rib, that's a pretty far distance. But on a roast or something, that's just barely scratching the surface.
Right.
They can get into the pores and the cracks and crevices, but they can't penetrate like salt does. So you put your spice rub on top. And if you go to AmazingRibs.com or this new book that we just put out, it has my recipe for Meathead's Memphis Dust, which is a spice rub without salt that competitors use in competitions. It wins awards. It's a wonderful spice rub. And you can just make it yourself. It's easy. Everything that's in it is in your, probably on your spice rack right now. And save a lot of money. You don't have to buy a rub. So you're going to put salt down, and then you rub down. And now you're going to divide your grill in half, hot side, not hot side, and you're going to put the meat on the not hot side. No flame, no coals, no nothing underneath it. It's going to sit there and gently roast in convection airflow, and you're going to try to get that air to about 225 degrees. And you can't trust your thermometer in the dome of your grill.
No.
Because it's in the center, and you've got your grill divided in half, so it's going to read the average. If you can afford it, go spend $30, $40, $50 and get a thermometer with a probe that you can put right next to the meat. This will serve you well for everything you cook. This thermometer will tell you what temperature the meat is feeling. And that's essential because cooking is all about temperature control. If you don't have control of temperature, you can't be a good cook. And outdoors, your doggone grill has no thermostat. Your indoor oven has a thermostat. Now, there are some of these new pellet grills that have thermostats, and they're fantastic because of that. But most gas grills and charcoal grills don't.
Right.
So thermometers are the key to success.
So that leads me to another question. I come from an area that we actually developed the pellet. I didn't have anything to do with it, but the pellet grills kind of came from this neck of the woods for the most part with Traeger.
And you're in the land of origin of pellet grills with Traeger and Mac and the others.
Yeah, Green Mountain and the whole crew. Yeah. So again, they have a most of them have a burn pot in the middle, and you've got a couple of drip pans, if you will, with holes in them that go across. Then you've got your racks, and I'm just speaking general. There's different layouts inside the cooking dome on different grills, but most of them, that's the way they're basically set up. So how would you do that, or as far as you – because you really can't get a cool side and a hot side in a pellet grill.
Well, the beauty of those things are they call them a grill, but they're really not. They're an oven.
Yeah.
Their design is very much like your indoor oven. They have this little burn pot. It's like the size of an oversized beer can. And these pellets, which are pure wood, no glue, no nothing.
Right.
It looks like you took a pencil and broke it into 10 parts. and it's just made out of sawdust, and they burn, and so you're burning pure wood. And it makes a lovely tasting, gentle, subtle smoke. But it's underneath a metal plate. So just like your oven, your flame is underneath a metal plate. So you have nothing but convection airflow. There's only one or two of them where you can get the food exposed to direct flame. That direct flame is infrared energy, and infrared energy is a lot different than convection airflow energy. It carries a much bigger punch. And if you're going to sear a steak, you really need infrared energy to get a great sear on a steak like they do at a steakhouse. And that's why these pellet grills, or smokers, better called smokers than grills, they're not really good at searing a steak, but they're really good at roasting, at doing things like ribs or pork butts or brisket, smoking things. So if you want a really great sear, you need infrared energy, and you can get that really well from a charcoal grill.
Yep.
Now, you can also sear well in a hot pan. And so you could put a hot pan into a pellet smoker and get that metal really hot, and conduction energy is even more powerful than infrared energy. So you can get a good sear by putting it in the hot pan. So you roast it first, then you put it in a hot pan and sear it.
Yep, that will work. The pellet grills are, and we got to take a break here in just a minute, Meathead, but the one thing about the pellet grills that are kind of cool, and we've talked about this, they're easy. I mean, I can go turn on my Green Mountain grill. I can come back in about 10 minutes, and it's pretty close to temp. Or I won't have to wait very long, versus charcoal, where even if you use a chimney and stuff, it takes a little bit for those coals to get hot, and then you put them where they're supposed to be, and blah, blah, blah.
Not a lot longer, though.
Yeah, not too bad, but the other thing is, like, I'm not pitching them, but Green Mountain, when you're done, you hit the button, you go down to 150 degrees, you press that button again, the fan comes on, and it blows out all the hot air, puts out the flame, and within 20 minutes, that grill is cool for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some practicalities into using that. Which
I love my pellet smoker.
Yeah, I think they're really good. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up, even though Meathead doesn't do wrap per se, but maybe someday I'll con him into that. And we'll get you cooking ribs next week, that's for sure. Stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and you're listening to us on the Sun and Vision Radio Network. Today we've got our good friend Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. Don't forget, he's got a new rib book out that's on Amazon at $3.99. He's going to tell you more about it in just a second, and I would recommend it and get it before 4th of July so you don't screw up your ribs. Take it away, Meathead.
It's called, surprisingly, Amazing Ribs Made Easy. There's a space between Amazing Ribs. And our website is amazingribs.com. But, I mean, we started that website in 2005 with one recipe, a rib recipe. And I said at the time, I'm going to write a book about ribs, because that's really what I set out to do when I started the website. And then I did pulled pork and brisket and chicken and burgers and steak and on and on and on. And I never got around to writing the book on ribs. Finished it this week. It's live online on Amazon. I'm real proud of it. It's a really good rib book.
Good, good, good. Good, good, good.
At $3.99.
You can't beat that with a plow line, really. I'm using some of my old farm euphemisms.
You're just
here.
An old farmer. That's
yeah. Did I tell you, by the way, that Powerball is up to an 18-pack of Charmin this week? So just saying. Okay, so now they're, and the other thing that we didn't say that I kind of, when people ask, when you put your rub on, if you should probably use a glove, but if you don't, pat it in. Don't try to smush it in, because then it just kind of balls up on you. If you don't,
yeah. But do you want to, you know, you want to keep it from falling off. Some people like to put mustard on top first before the rub, because it acts like a glue and holds the rub on from falling off. That's not a bad move. They think the mustard's going to influence the flavor. It doesn't. It's mostly water. You would never taste it. If you want mustard flavor, go get Coleman's mustard powder. That'll give you a mustard flavor. But I just wet my hands and pat it so that the surface is damp, and then the rub will stick to the wet surface.
Right.
And away you go. Baby backs, if you can keep the air temperature around 225, will take 3 to 4 hours. And the other ribs, St. Louis cut spare ribs, will take 5 to 6 hours. And now here's an issue. It's hard to tell when they're done. All other cuts of meat, just about everything else you cook, you can tell when it's done with a handheld digital thermometer.
Right.
And that's why thermometers are so important. You can, with a handheld digital thermometer, you'll never overcook a steak. You'll never have to apologize for well-done steak or undercooked chicken, which is a health risk. But ribs are really hard to get an accurate measurement for, because the meat in between the bones is so narrow and so... the bone can throw your thermometer off. You can use a thermometer, and you should, but it's not the be all end all. We use something called the bend test, and you just pick the ribs up with a pair of tongs and kind of bounce them on the tongs. And if the surface cracks, then you know they're done.
Right.
Be careful; it could break and fall off. For sure, they're done. But that's your rule of thumb. At 225, that's your target temp. You don't want to go any higher than that. If you go any higher than that, the proteins shrink, the muscles shrink, you squeeze out moisture, you'll get tough ribs. Keep the temp down. 3 to 4 hours for baby backs, 5 to 6 hours for the other cuts.
And if you pick it up and they both fall off, that would they like it to fall off the bone, you have succeeded for them at that point.
Well, it probably won't fall off the bone. It's just at that spot where they bent, it did crack.
Yeah.
They'll be okay.
Helped a guy a few weeks ago, and we picked it up, and they fell off. They split and fell off, and I said, okay, I think
And that can happen if you overcook them or if you've seen them. Some people like to wiggle the bone. If the bone starts to turn in the socket, that's always a good sign. Some people use the toothpick test, like they do when they're cooking a cake. I like the bounce test.
Yeah.
Now, here's an important tip. When you think they're done, bounce test, twist the bone, whatever you do, when you think they're ready, now you add the sauce. You don't put the sauce on any earlier. You add the sauce at the last step. And this is a key. You're building a symphony of flavors here. You've got the pork meat itself, which is pork muscle, fat, connective tissue, which gelatinizes. So you have a little bit of an orchestration of flavors there. Then you have the salt, which amplifies the flavor without really altering it. And then you have your spices, your rub, which add layers of flavor. So you have paprika, garlic. My meathead's Memphis Dust has white sugar and brown sugar, has a little ginger in it, has rosemary, a few other things. So you now are building layers of flavor, and you have the smoke. And so you've got this orchestra of flavors here. You don't want to smother it with a lot of sauce. Most barbecue sauces, your red barbecue sauces, are based on tomato paste or ketchup. And they're kind of like ketchup on steroids. There's vinegar, there's flavorings, herbs and spices. If you put too much on, you completely mask the flavor. Now, we all love sauce. I mean, you know, after you're done brushing the meat, we all suck the brush. and don't tell me you don't.
No, it's true.
Don't tell me.
It's true.
We love the sauce because it's sweet and it's rich and it's like, but one or two layers of sauce is enough. Don't bury all those other flavors. It'd be like the tuba taking over the orchestra. You want just the right amount, one or two layers, not too thick, and that, and you put it on after you know the ribs are done, and you just let them bake on for 10 or 15 minutes. Now, there's one more trick you can do. If you're cooking it on a grill, if you're cooking on a smoker, you're in a warm air environment. You're not, you don't have a hot side and not hot side.
Right.
But if you're cooking on a grill, you got a hot side. You can now lift the lid and take those ribs with the sauce and put it right over the hot side, right over the flames on your gas grill or the hot coals on your charcoal grill, and sizzle the sauce. There's sugar in there, and it will caramelize. And if you, and within a minute or so, you'll start seeing the sauce bubble and sizzle. And what's happening is the sugars are being altered. They're changing their chemistry, and that really improves them somewhat. And then you flip it over, do the same thing. If you want to put one more layer on, go ahead, but that's it.
Yep.
You're done.
We've got to get out of here. Next hour, we've got Lene Oxley-Loop coming up, talking about her experiences on Pitmaster. But don't forget, AmazingRibs.com. His new rib book is on Amazon, $3.99. And I'm going to con him into sticking around for the after hours. I know we're both pressed for time today, so we'll make it a short one. And that's it. We're good. Thank you, Meathead.
Always fun.
It is. We'll see you in a few minutes. And for those of you don't and your network affiliates that don't carry both hours of the show, we'll see you next week. Take care, everybody.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved.